The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 7th of February, 2020. On the podcast today, it's Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about portfolio construction and diversification. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of this, at voxmarkets.co.uk, with this follows buttons next to them on the most followed. So if you want to follow a stock that's highly followed, just hit that follow button and you'll receive news off them. And also, of course, there's a list of RNSs below that top 10 there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
Very well, Justin. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, thanks. Now, good. Do you know what? There's always, especially in these times where there's big sell-offs, the coronavirus is around, and people say, well, and some people's stocks, especially if they've got exposure to China, have taken a big hit. And so you always hear about people say, well, listen, if you have a diversified portfolio, you don't need to worry about dips and recessions, really, because you should be, you know, prepared for that. And I thought the other day, you know, this, we're all saying, you know, a recession has got to be not far off, because we've had highs, all-time highs in American markets. And I thought to myself, sometimes preparing your portfolio for a recession is like taking out insurance for your boiler. You know you should do it. You know you should do it.
Yeah.
But you think, you know, your boiler doesn't break down for like 10 years and then you've got to buy a new one anyway. And so it's that kind of thing. But if it does happen, at least then you'll have peace of mind. So let's talk about, you know, construction of a portfolio and diversification. And how, you know, what does it mean by a diversified portfolio, Russ? Take us through it.
What you're trying to do there is really prepare for a number of eventualities, because none of us have a crystal ball. In the end, we're investors, not soothsayers. So although we can have an opinion on what we think is going to happen in the future, we have to be honest enough with ourselves to admit we aren't always going to be right. And as you said, there may be an unexpected recession, for example, or it may be something that comes out of left field, like an epidemic of some kind, or it could be a natural phenomenon like an earthquake. For example, to take an extreme example, what you don't want to be doing, for example, is say, okay, I think the oil price is going up and own 10 oil companies, nothing else. Because what happens if you're wrong and the oil price goes down? Because either there's a recession, or because the world starts moving away from burning hydrocarbons, or because there's a big new find somewhere, or a technological development that means it's easier and cheaper to get out the ground. And certainly with commodities, history shows that the human race's ability to produce them in greater volumes ever more cheaply means that betting against human ingenuity when it comes to things like that is probably a pretty bad place to be, and therefore being long commodities purely on the basis of things like demographics and the population's getting bigger is not a good idea. But so the extreme example is, I think the oil price is going up, I'm going to own 10 oil companies, Exxon, Chevron, BP, Shell, Total, Eni, Gazprom, get out of there, and the oil price goes down and you get your trousers pulled down. So that is the most extreme example.
You've just
got to be prepared for the fact that you could get things wrong, or there could just be some element of divine intervention that just upsets a perfectly well-placed investment strategy.
Yeah, also, do you know, have you seen that guy? I mean, it's called Black Swan. I can't think of the guy who wrote it. Taleb.
Naeem Nicholas Taleb.
Yeah, but he's talked about Black Swan events, these things that people never see coming. And I suppose the coronavirus is one of these.
Unknown.
That's it.
I suppose.
And he's saying, how surprisingly, how often they come around, you know?
Well, there you go. I mean, in the end, you know, if you just look at my investment career since 1991, you know, you saw the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, which caused a market wobble then. You had the tequila sunset of 1994 in Mexico, Asian-Russian crisis 97-98, tech bubble burst 2000, US housing bubble burst 2007, market collapse for 3 years, US debt downgrade scare in 2011, European debt crisis 12-13. There are constant examples of, you know, these stumbles, and, you know, they can have a very serious effect. And the test is then, because you start to see things going down very quickly, 10, 15, even 20%, the pressure then builds. Am I on the right track? Do I sell? And you could potentially sell at the wrong one. But if you've got another part of your portfolio that's performing, bringing in some dividends or some coupons or even going up while everything else goes down, the pressure to sell is not as strong. And quite, and as we know, the market can be very irrational. Now, I hope you're not going to ask me about Tesla's share price, but you know, the old thing about the market can remain irrational for longer than you can stay solvent. And as Cain said, and at the moment, I think the one thing that I'm wrestling with as somebody who has been doing this for nearly 30 years, was trained as a value investor, was trained as an investor who invested for competitive position and pricing power and strength of company business models. A lot of that's not working now. If something's expensive and the chart's going from left to bottom left to top right, and I defer to you on charts every time, Justin, but if the chart's going from top left to bottom left to top right, they generally seem to be keeping going right now, because as the index weightings goes up, the algos pile in, the passive funds pile in, and then the weighting goes up, so the algos pile in and the passive funds pile in, and it creates an almost reinforcing flow-driven circle. And the same applies in reverse to value stocks, whose chart has gone from top left to bottom right. The smaller the index weighting in the index, the ETFs dump it, the passives dump it, the algos don't go near it, and that becomes self-reinforcing as well. So in the old, God, don't say that, in the old, but during a lot, big chunk of my career, you could look at a stock and think, actually, that's just pricing an awful lot of good news, I don't need to play. Or you could say, oh, look at this, I know it's the share price has collapsed, I'm buying it below book value, I've got some value, I've got some downside protection. And neither of those techniques is working at the moment. It's certainly giving me sleepless nights, and it means that, again, you need to be prepared for A, the market can do some very odd things, B, it may have changed permanently, I don't know, but C, you've always got to be aware of the fact that things could be going on that you know you're not necessarily prepared for, and again, therefore, you need a diversified portfolio. Now, Warren Buffett, master investor, calls diversification diversification. So this is the opposite view. He says diversification is for people who don't know what they're doing, and that if you've really done your research and you're really on top of it, then you don't need to diversify because you've got supreme confidence in your picks, you're in for the long term, and you just can let them trickle along. But most people aren't billionaires. Most people don't have his degree of expertise. Most people don't have the amount of time he commits to the search for portfolio winners. And therefore, I think some degree of diversification is right. Because as Buffett says, in his career, his personal wealth has fallen by 50% on two occasions. And it is nice to have a little bit of a buffer against that. So I think there are two or three ways in which you can diversify. One.
Can I say one thing about Buffett? I always find that funny because people use that as an excuse to be in one or two stocks, you know. And I think, but if you look at how many he's invested in, it's a lot more than most people think.
I mean, what's interesting about his portfolio, if you actually look at it now, most of it's airlines and banks and financial services companies. Yeah. So although he owns probably 12 or 15 big stakes on top of all of his industrial assets, his actual equity portfolio is very, very focused in two or three areas. And he has now started to mosey into things like Apple, having got out of IBM, because he admits he underestimated its cash generative capabilities. But his portfolio is, his actual equity holdings are relatively tight, but he's still got 12 or 15 of them. Yeah, and that's one way in which you diversify, is you own, if you're an individual stocks person and you're confident enough in your abilities, and you have the patience and the skills to do it, I would suggest that 12 to 15 companies in different sectors and different geographies will give you a good diversified portfolio and hopefully build you a little bit of a buffer against one thing going wrong here, one thing going right here. And beyond that number, you're probably incurring dealing costs that are frankly painful and actually starting to erode your returns. And just keeping on top of your existing portfolios while researching new portfolio ideas, while researching new ones, is going to get to be a bit of a burden. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that you can do. The other thing that you can do is you can do it through, not just through indirect stocks, but through funds or you know, passive funds, which are quick, cheap, currently easy to access. And you know, a passive tracker will provide you to access to, you know, if it's the FTSE All World Index, you've got 1,700 companies you're playing with straight away in one instrument, for example.
Yeah.
So that's another one. Or you can build up a portfolio of funds, just like you can build up a portfolio of stocks, again, while keeping an eye on the costs, not just the cost of getting in and out, which hopefully isn't very big, but the ongoing charges that the funds charge, and there one sort of the charges that platforms such as ourselves, you know, charge you to do the all the important administration for you. Mm-hmm. So you can do that. There are two other techniques. You can, I mean, one way in which the textbooks always talk about diversifying is running a 60-40 fund.
Yeah.
60% equities, 40% bonds or cash, because again, if equities go down, at least you're still getting the coupons in from the bonds, you're getting the downside protection from the cash, and the cash provides a nice buffer. You know, if you think, hang on, things have oversold for no good reason here, a fantastic position to find yourself in is having money when nobody else has got it, because that's when you're picking up bargains. Mm-hmm. You can also do this through things like target-dated funds, which actually will, now what they do for you is that they will run effectively or something like the old rule of 100. Now, when I was starting, the rule of 100 was you took your age, in your case 21, Justin, I'm sure,
yeah,
subtracted it from the number 100, yeah, and that was the percentage of your portfolio you put into equities, because you had the long-term growth potential of equities on your side, plus some dividend yield, and you had a little bit of protection from bonds and cash. And the idea was, as you closer you get to retirement at, let's call it 65, you would rebalance according to that rule of 100, so that by the time you got to 65, you probably had 65% in bonds and 35% in equities, because then if you got to retirement and went into drawdown, the stock market wouldn't inconveniently collapse under your feet at just the wrong time and rip loads of capital gains away from you just when you needed to start tapping the portfolio.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, problem with rule of 100 is that that was kind of built on when interest rates were like, government bond yields were 5% plus. Mm-hmm. You're not getting much of a return, yeah, on bonds or cash right now. So I've heard people now talk about a rule of 110, for example. But again, it's a lot of this will be down to the listeners, you know, what their personal time horizons and target returns and appetites for risk are. But that's one way. And target return funds like those run by Vanguard will do this for you automatically. You can pick a target fund. It'll tell you when it's going to mature, and it will then do this automatic rebalancing for you, you know, every year or every couple of years. So you don't even have to worry about that if you don't want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But there are, is that real thing of people saying at the moment, you know, bonds. It's and the reason why the stock market continues to do well is because, of course, central banks are pushing down interest rates pretty much, and so
Correct. There's
only one game in town, isn't it? So where does this all end? And is it point? Is it worth just holding? I've got now at the moment 30% in cash, pretty much in my portfolio,
yep,
and it annoys me because I think nothing's going on with it really, and I can't do it.
Yeah.
But also I don't want to just pile into equity still, because I just think.
FOMO of me, yeah, don't fear of missing out can lead you astray, very
definitely. Yeah, but the thing is we can keep rallying as if we have done. We've been talking about recessions for pretty much years now, and it hasn't come to pass. We had a couple of dips,
and equally, what bonds you've got have actually continued to offer you capital gains, because bond prices are continuing to go up, which I don't think a lot of people would have expected. And if the West does go Japanese, or central bank's next box of tricks is negative interest rates in the West, even a UK 10-year gilt yielding 0.6% is going to look like gold dust if the UK interest rate goes to -1. So again, and while we don't expect that, or that's not the orthodox view, we can't rule it out entirely. Because, you know, for me, the debate over the Bank of England recently, and I've been thinking about this of late, is people keep asking, are they going to cut? And for me, the question is, what are they so frightened of that they're not going to raise?
Yeah.
Unemployment is at a 40-year low. Asset prices are at a record high. Inflation is relatively well contained.
Yeah.
What are they frightened of?
But is that the case, though? Inflation is not above their target. That's a problem, isn't it? I mean, will it ever be now, though? You know?
I think if you're a consumer, what's the problem? It means goods aren't getting more expensive, right?
Yeah.
It's a good thing if you're a consumer. I mean, let's face it, if we walk past two shops and one says toaster's 50% more expensive, one says toaster's 50% off, which one are we going to go in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
it's not the one where the prices is going up because of inflation, is it? Mm. So, and just one final point on diversification. Just on this point, the guy who runs my SIP for me, because everything, dear listener, is done discretionary. So none of you can think I'm talking about things that I own and I'm taking the mickey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so please rest assured on that one. Mm. But I will tell you what my advisor does. He runs a four bucket portfolio, and it's actually based on Dylan Grice's four-bucket portfolio that he put together in 2012 when he was working at Societe Generale. Mr. Grice wanted to put together a portfolio that he felt was, to use his word, ready for anything and as indestructible as a cockroach.
Mm-hmm.
And so he back-tested several different types of portfolio, and he eventually came up with one that had barely had, in real inflation-adjusted terms, let's face it, one of the things that all investors are looking to do is beat inflation and protect the value of their money, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He devised a portfolio, ultimately, that I think had, you know, I mean, in absolute terms, kind of one down year in 20 or 30 in real terms, which means he can pretty much go to bed at night.
Yeah.
And it was a four bucket, 25% each, high yielding equities, or, you know, decent dividend generate paying equities, mm-hmm. what he then called high quality bonds, physical gold and cash.
Yeah.
And every year it was then rebalanced. And over time, all the way through the 70s, when inflation went bananas, all the way through the disinflationary period of, you know, when equities went bananas, all the way through the financial crisis, when bonds held up very well and everything else did, you know, it continued to bring something into the pot pretty much every single year in nominal terms and even better in real terms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my advisor does something very similar. To take up your point, he actually is of your view that bonds are just not worth the grief,
mm-hmm.
and that the risk reward is sufficiently skewed towards risk. If there's any inflationary upturn, if there's any increase in interest rates, bonds are not a good place to be. So he has taken bonds out.
Mm-hmm.
He is putting things like infrastructure funds for additional yield, and he's also putting some trend following algo funds, which I know for private investors are quite hard to access, to provide some crash protection, but also some upside if there's a massive melt up.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then each time that's rebalanced. So it's 25% gold, 25% cash, 25% equities, 25% bonds. And then, listeners, if there's one of those that you don't like, some of you might not like cash, some of you might think gold is a barbarous relic, some of you might like bond, not like bonds, you'll all probably like dividend generating equities, funnily enough, mm-hmm. which might be therefore the first one that actually goes genuinely wrong. And then work around, that is the way in which my SIP, my pension, is diversified. Because, you know, equities bring you exposure to growth and dividend income. Bonds give you protection against deflation or recession. Cash gives you optionality and, again, protection against recession. And gold is there because, you know, it generally does well during times of monetary stress and loss of central bank control, such as we had in 2007-09, for example. And overall, you would like to think that at any one stage, a couple of those are hanging in there, even if the other two aren't doing. And over time so far, mm-hmm. it's worked okay. So that is another angle to think about beyond 12 to 15 stocks or a 60-40 portfolio or a target date fund. That's another way of going about it. But again, it's what suits your individual long-term investment goals, target returns, time horizon, and appetite for risk, with appetite for risk being defined as ability and willingness to withstand loss in the search for profit.
Yeah. And you know, I was reading up on gold recently, and I was surprised at how well it's done over the years compared to...
You'd be surprised, mate, I tell you.
Yeah.
I know everybody boffs on about equities, but you look at gold versus the S&P 500 since 2000, I know you can pick... We can all pick our starting points and our finish points, right?
Mm.
But, you know, you would be surprised. And at a time when central banks have already thought nothing of creating 25 to 100% of GDP of fresh money out of the air, 25% in the UK, all the way up to 100 in Japan,
mm-hmm.
that may be one reason why people have latched onto things like gold, because gold supply only grows by 2% a year if you're lucky. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that's also why people have, you know, latched onto art or vintage cars or Ian Fleming first editions, because there aren't going to be any more of them.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, paper money, how much do you want, mate? You know, or electronic money, how much do you want?
And that's the argument against with Bitcoin bulls at the moment as well, because that supply is going down. And I mean, obviously, that's very questionable there. But they're calling it digital gold because the supply goes down. But if, you know, say fiat currency, paper money is printed. You know,
the supply is with Bitcoin, the supply is limited to 21 million units or something, isn't it? Because of the way in which you set up.
So
But I think ultimately, as you use the correct word there, fake currency,
mm-hmm.
you know, fake currency, fake meat, you know, fake electric car company, maybe. I mean, you know, you've got to, I know it sells them, but it's profit, its accounts don't stack up. So I think that what I would suspect is in this environment, we are going to see more mini bubbles, whether it's fake currencies, fake meats, cannabis. I think space stocks is probably one of the next bubbles that's coming up. You know, electric vehicles, you could see a bubble in anything related to those. So, and I think you just need to treat those with caution. Yeah, ride them if you want, but know what you're letting yourself in for, which things that go up like a rocket will eventually do what? Which is come down like the stick.
Yeah.
And so therefore, you've just got to, you know, and that could be, again, talking of diversification, if you know you've got your long-term strategy, but you want to have a bit of fun and have a sex, drugs, violence, and rock and roll punt fund element for small caps or wacky stuff, have a little bit, 5 to 10%. If it doubles, it helps. But if it goes to zero, it doesn't kill you. But it's got to be done within the confines of knowing what can go wrong, which is it could all go wrong. So again, that can be another form of diversification. Yeah, I'll leave 90% of it, I'll let it do its thing, but I've got my little bucket here where I can just try and make a bit of a difference. But if I get it wrong, I'm not going to seriously hurt my long-term returns.
Yeah, but you know what? Only recently, and whenever new investors come into the fray, and I did a sort of series of videos on YouTube saying things I've learned about investing in small caps, especially. I said never ever expose yourself to more than 10% of your entire portfolio value to one stock. Never. And that's maximum, so you don't have to go up to that. But that is maximum, because if it all goes wrong, and in small caps they can go wrong. Especially really small caps, you can have drops of like 25% in a day, pretty much.
Well, and that could be the spread if you depending on what you're playing in.
And so I said sometimes if you have really bad news, you know, it's not a surprise you can have 50% wiped off. So if you've only got 10% of your portfolio in that, that's only a 5% hit to your portfolio. So it's not, you know, think in those terms. And even though just now I've just literally come up with a spreadsheet, and I now categorize stocks into four categories, and I start off with like 2.5% exposure, and if I liked a bit more, I'll take it up to 5% on the right price, 7.5%. Then I won't go any further than that, because I mean I think if it doubles, that's 15% of my portfolio. If it goes well, small cap stocks, you know, so that's and I'm categorizing them, you know, and you have to do sort of quality sort of test on them.
I think that's a really good way of doing it. And just to quantify that in a different way, if you do pick a stock that halves. Yeah. And let's face it, we've all done it, yeah? When I was allowed to, I did. And even when I was doing it professionally as an analyst in an investment bank, I might pick out a couple that halved pretty quickly. The thing's got to double to get back to where you started.
Yeah.
And how many doublers do you pick?
Exactly, yeah.
It doesn't happen overnight. So just think of the maths of how much...
Yeah.
You know, how long it takes you to get back to where you started. If you do pick a halver, you've got to pick a doubler.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as easy as it sounds, even in small caps.
No. But you know what I've always found? Whenever I started researching a stock and I quite like it, you always become over-enthusiastic about the stock and you always go too big too early on, because there's always volatility. There's always big sell-offs, like left field events happening they'll present opportunities further. And so start off small. If it goes wrong, you've lost small. But if you like it, you can always scale in the right levels.
Down if you're still in the case.
Yeah, exactly.
And as we know from that wonderful Mr. Market image that Benjamin Graham conjured up, you know, Mr. Market will knock on your front door every day. Mm. One day he'll offer you a share price of £1. The next day he'll offer you a share price of £2. And then 3 months later he's offering you a share price of 50p.
Yeah.
Because markets aren't efficient. They are prone to greed and fear.
Yeah,
and it's your job as an analyst, as an investor, to pick your moments.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Mr. Market's running about like Edler's chicken offering you 50p,
That's clearly
more interesting than Mr. Market's all cocky and letting you say, well, fancy. I haven't got many left. Those for £2 if you want, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. That's like Buffett at the moment. You know, Buffett is like, isn't it all-time cash high, pretty much, close to?
Gazillions of cash.
Yeah. And because, the market's all-time high. And I can't believe he still has lots of patience, even though he's 80-odd. He still has so much patience to wait. And I'm thinking, all he does is the market just sells off, you know, a big nice drop, 10, 20% over the next, and then he'll start just sweeping it up off the floor, you know.
I've charted it. Yeah. I've actually charted his quarterly cash pile back to about 1995. Going through the Berkshire Hathaway accounts and run the S&P 500 against it.
Yeah.
And the higher it goes, the higher his cash pile gets, and the lower it goes, the lower his cash pile gets.
Yeah.
So he's trying to buy low and, you know, not then, well, if he does sell, he's trying to sell, but his job is to, he views his job is to buy low, and you know, he's there, even though he's only 80, he's 80 odd. I mean, the one thing I would say about Berkshire is I've got, you know, you can buy the shares, right? So you can just invest like Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, I mean, the shares trade at a premium to net asset value that's absolutely enormous.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And he tells you what his top 10, 15 or 20 holdings are in the document. You can do it twice as cheaply yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's not being nasty about Buffett, for whom I have an enormous amount of time.
Yeah.
But what's happened to the share price when the poor old boy, you know?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Moves on to the great stock exchange in the sky.
Well, exactly. And it's, do you know, at the moment, it's like, and I don't want to be sort of insensitive, but what's going to come first, a recession or Buffett's demise? Because, you know, either could be way off.
And I hope he's around to his 110, quite frankly.
Yeah, yeah.
because he still writes. He's fantastic. I look forward to reading the Bart Chathaway annual report and accounts and the letter to shareholders. Comes out at the end of this month. It's always terrific reading, informative, and for better still, well written and generally quite witty. Yeah. I mean, one of his, I can't remember what it was now, but one of his letters to shareholders, he said, well, people often ask me, rather ghoulishly, what would I like them to say about me at my funeral? And I always say, well, I'd like them to say, I think I saw him move. Which always makes me, anyway.
Yeah.
I know, but it always makes me laugh.
No, I love that. Do you know what? At the end of it, though, when it comes down to a last sort of thing here, but it's just with him, it's just discipline, isn't it? He knows what works and he sticks with it. Like I said, the patience he's got right now at his age, even, to say, I'll sit and wait on cash, when he's 80 odd, it's like phenomenal.
My point about your listeners, whatever investment you make, whether it's a fund, an individual stock, an active fund, a passive fund, and whatever, do it knowing that it fits with your strategy, your long-term, your goals, your time horizon, and your target risk and your appetite for risk. Stick to that, because otherwise you will mandate drift, as it were. If you give your money to a fund manager and say, oh, look, I want him or her to invest in UK blue chip FTSE 100 companies, and then you find them faffing about in AIM companies, you go, well, what on earth are they doing? I'm going to sack them because they're doing something I don't want them to do. So don't be guilty of doing it yourself by drifting away from what you've set out to do and what suits your long-term plan.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Russ, thanks for that, helpful as always.
Enjoy your weekend, mate.
Have a nice weekend yourself. Any plans for yourself?
I'm taking the lad to watch Lewis FC play football tomorrow.
Wrap up warm.
Yeah, yes, and then Sunday, I think the weather's going to be awful, so we'll probably just hunker down. But a bit of a pub lunch and then a trip down to watch 7th-tier English football tomorrow. They're playing the mighty Cheshunt. It's a relegation scrap.
That sounds good.
A three-pointer if ever there was one.
Yeah, sounds good. Have a nice weekend.
Take care.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Touchstone Exploration, down 1.28% at 38.5 pence. TXP is a ticker there. Novacit, I have no idea how to say that. NCYT, Novacic, SAS. It's all to do with coronavirus, of course, and they've got testing kits apparently there. That's up 13.58% at 46 pence. Add three, Infrastructure India. That's the second time it's been in the top five here. It's up 2.22% at 2.3 pence. Add two, Escape Hunt. Escape is, ESC is the ticker there, and that's up 16.36% to 19.2 pence. And number one, most followed company is Boyle or Barron Oil. It's done a massive rise this week and it's up again 55% today, 0.45 pence. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, it is i3 Energy Board and Operational Update. At four, Ilika successful Stibix field trial. At three, Touchstone Exploration, same as yesterday, 12 hours away there. Cascadura test confirms liquids rich gas discovery. At two, update on novel coronavirus test. That's Novavax. No idea. And number one, Extract Resources, drilling update on Eureka and Kajuva at Zambia. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchus appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.